I'm Gina Kaufman, and now we're turning our attention to a legal case that's getting attention nationwide. It has to do with the disciplinary reach of universities in policing student behavior on social media. We're looking at the expulsion of a KU student for comments he made about an ex-girlfriend on Twitter. To better understand the case itself, let's talk to a reporter from the Lawrence Journal World, Caitlin Dorenbos. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Could you summarize the sequence of events that set the stage for this drama between the two students and then between the young man and the university?
Sure. Two students were in a relationship for the school year of 2012 into 2013. That relationship was described in court documents as being tumultuous. It ultimately ended in an argument in a car in Olathe, Kansas, between the plaintiff in this case, Mr. Naveed Yassin, and his now ex-girlfriend. There was an argument, and it culminated by Mr. Yassin taking away her cell phone and not letting her out of the vehicle. That young woman ultimately reported that incident to authorities, and Mr. Yassin was charged with criminal restraint, battery, and another charge. That ultimately turned into a diversion agreement if he agreed to a no-contact order, basically a restraining order between the two individuals. When they got back to campus, the victim reported that to KU's Institutional Opportunity Access Center, and they took action and issued a no-contact order between the Mr. Yassin and his ex-girlfriend.
So they told him not to. So he has a legal no-contact order and sort of a university discipline no-contact order.
Right, right. And the university issued that no-contact order in response to the summer incident that happened in Johnson County.
Gotcha. So before any of this Twitter activity has happened, there's a history of involvement from both the university and legal authorities. But talk about the what is the basis for the university stepping in and responding to what happened in a car in Johnson County?
You know, the attorneys are arguing that they have the ultimate duty to create a safe learning environment for their students. And in order to protect their a student who had suffered, you know, abuse from another student, they wanted to make sure that those students would not be in contact in order to maintain a safe campus.
So there was a suspension at some point in here. The student was suspended before he was expelled, right?
Right, of course. So after that no-contact order was given, Mr. Yassin took to Twitter, and he tweeted tweets that were defamatory about his ex-girlfriend. Did not mention her by name, and he had actually removed her as one of the followers of his Twitter account. I believe the Twitter account was private and only accessible to his friends, but somehow that tweet, as it does often with social media, it landed in the hands of that young woman who the tweets were in reference to.
Can you say more about the content of these tweets? I mean, I know that we probably aren't going to hear them verbatim, but what kind of content did she find problematic?
Sure. An example of a tweet is calling her psycho, calling her defamatory names. He had a derogatory nickname for her regarding a medical condition of hers. So there's four tweets about in that nature.
So, yeah. And
so that was after the no contact order, right?
And then so the school steps in, if I understand correctly, sends him a letter making sure he understands that his behavior on social media is included within what they consider to be a no contact order, right?
Exactly. They acknowledge that that not all the actions may have occurred on campus, but he is not to have any contact with her directly or indirectly, which brings up an interesting point to this case, which we can discuss later.
Yeah. So what are the arguments on both sides in court? Because there's been a lot of back and forth. The school eventually did expel him. He filed suit against the school for that. And there's been quite a bit of back and forth since then.
Right, there really has been. So after after they sent that letter, he ended up sending another tweet in reference to her. They expelled him. The argument is in Douglas County District Court, our judge here, the district judge, decided that the university essentially didn't follow its own code when they expelled Mr. Yassin, because they explicitly have in the university code that they can punish conduct, sexual harassment conduct, that happens within the university's campus or at university-sponsored events. The argument there is that there's no proof to say that these tweets happened on campus. The incident that happened that drew the no-contact order in the first place didn't even happen in the same county. There's a jurisdictional issue there that is touchy and possibly has effects that would expand further than just KU in this case.
Something that really interests me about this, and we're going to get to it shortly, is what counts as on campus. I mean, so much of interaction, no matter where you are physically, does happen through the internet, whether that's social media or otherwise. And so the limits of what is on campus is pretty interesting. I mean,
it really is. And that's part of what the KU attorneys were arguing. She had said that posting to Twitter is like posting to a billboard on Jayhawk Boulevard. It's a public space. And they also argue that these actions have on-campus effects, and that's what allows them to use their authority in this case.
Let's get Emma Halling in on this conversation. She's just graduated from KU this past spring. Congratulations on your graduation, Emma.
Thank you.
The last time we visited, we were talking about KU's role in protecting students from sexual assault on campus. At the time, you were the student body vice president and co-chair of KU's Title IX committee. How does KU's position on this incident sit with you?
It's a difficult case because, in my opinion and in many people's opinion, the Department of Education's input on whether or not Title IX applies off campus is very clear.
Can you explain Title IX quickly for those who aren't familiar?
Sure. So it all dates back to a very simple piece of legislation which states that there should be no sex-based discrimination within programs receiving federal funds. And a number of court cases over the years have been used to indicate that in fact does apply to a student's ability to pursue an education without being sexually assaulted or harassed.
And so a lot of people see this as related to the university's ability to comply with Title IX.
Yes, that's the reason that the IOA exists and the reason that they were adjudicating this case.
And so do you see this case personally as a tension between free speech and student safety? That's a lot of what people are talking about related to it.
Yeah, I think it's also a question of policy sausage making, in that the document that they're having to use to base decisions on this on is the student code. And the student code at KU is a very messy document. We've had a number of other court cases where the judges have said just as much, that it conflicts in areas, it's confusing. And the reason for that is the student code is curated by the student senate and has to be approved by the chancellor and the board of regents ultimately. But what happens every 2 years, is reviewed every 2 years, is that the University of Kansas's administration will come to the student senate with a proposal for what they think it should be. And then the student senate kind of counteroffers and they decide what to make from that. But the University of Kansas has legal counsel, and student senate has no access to legal counsel because it costs like $350 an hour with a minimum number of billable hours.
Who pays that?
Well, they don't. And so it's a bunch of 20-year-olds trying to make sense of their of being able to control their own legal rights and responsibilities. So what happens is the students generally just say no. The university pursues more leeway in adjudicating off-campus things. A lot of other universities have systems where any behavior off-campus is adjudicable by the university. You have a certain code of conduct. KU does not have that. The administration has indicated that they want that, but the students say no. And even though if the chancellor really wanted to push through off-campus jurisdiction for everything, she could. They have not at this point. I think there's a number of political reasons for that. But that's how we have the very messy sausage that is the student code that is the heart of this case.
The distinction between on-campus and off-campus, especially where social media is concerned, is really tricky. And I want to talk to you about that because Title IX guarantees students a safe learning environment regardless of gender. But is social media, in your mind, a part of a student's learning environment on today's college campuses? Emma, I'd like you to answer that, but Caitlin, feel free to jump in because you also are a recent KU graduate.
It's a tricky question. I think for the purposes of this case, it looks like no. But when it comes to how a student actually experiences everyday life, like I was involved in student politics and there were anonymous Twitter accounts dedicated to saying nasty things about me and my appearance and those of my friends. And so I have to go into classrooms. I have to go into meetings with professors knowing that the first impression that they may have had of me is some anonymous person's opinion about me. And I would say that that definitely impacts my educational experience.
Caitlin, what do you think?
Sure. I absolutely believe that social media is a part of everyday life for millennials especially, but really it's becoming everyone. It does affect your day, but as a journalist, I've got a battle for that prior restraint, especially with this case. The Douglas County District Judge said that the no-contact order saying that you cannot even talk about the ex-girlfriend to a friend or a parent was overbroad and then making it unconstitutional on its face.
Can there, part of what's come up, if I'm following this correctly, is that the student, the ex-girlfriend in this case, had incidents after some of this communication on Twitter where people on campus were either laughing at her or doing, she was encountering things on campus that were connected to these tweets. Is that correct?
That's what the victim perceived. It obviously hasn't been, I say it that way because it hasn't been proven in court. It's kind of more of an allegation, but she said that she had been on an elevator in Wesco Hall, one of the main university buildings here, with one of the friends of Mr. Yassin, and the friends were laughing at her. There was another incident where she went to a fraternity party and they asked her to leave because of her affiliation to Mr. Yassin. I think she was at another party in which there were some individuals who were friends with Mr. Yassin and laughed at her as well. So she suffered a lot of backlash following the breakup.
In an academic sense, do you think that the online experience extends into the campus experience and vice versa in ways beyond what we've already discussed? We haven't really discussed the role of social media and other online communication in the academic aspect of campus life.
Well, I mean, I hadn't thought about that, but I wonder what standard we are holding this speech to. Because I wonder if I were to say defamatory things on Twitter about an instructor, whether or not I would face consequences from the university for that. I mean, obviously that hasn't been tested, but this definitely suggests that. You know, everybody goes on Rate My Professor. Are you accountable for the things that you say there? What if something you say there is in some way racist or sexist? Have you in some way violated federal anti-discrimination law?
Central Standard will get right back to this conversation in just a minute. Do you think social media is part of a college campus, or is it separate and out of the university's disciplinary reach? 816-235-2888 with those insights. We'll just have a few minutes to get to those when we get back. I'm Gina Kaufman, Central Standard. We'll return. Let's dive right back into this discussion about the role of social media in the college campus ecosystem. A KU student has been expelled for tweets about an ex-girlfriend. The school argues that these tweets violated a no-contact order as well as the ex-girlfriend's protection from a hostile learning environment. We're used to thinking of a campus as a physical place. But is social media a part of that place? I'm Gina Kaufman, talking it over with Lawrence Journal World reporter Caitlin Dorzenboss and recent KU grad Emma Halling. Call 816-235-2888 to join the discussion. Emma, you were just talking about your experience overall on campus and your sense of where the boundaries are as far as your protections, either of free speech or from a hostile environment, how your online activity plays into that. Can you remind us of some earlier cases relating to sexual assault on KU's campus that had a lot of people saying that KU wasn't reaching far enough?
Yeah, so at the beginning of this academic year, there was a lot of very public pushback by students, alumni, and community members over a case that had gone public in the Huffington Post, where a student had been sexually assaulted by a person and went to the adjudication system through the Office of Institutional Opportunity and Access. The male student admitted that he had raped the female student, that he had had sex without her consent, and he wasn't even required to write a, like, apology or reflection paper. Like, that was not even the level of repercussions that he faced. And so students were very upset about that and called on the university to really refine their sexual assault and harassment policies so that students are actually protected and so we don't face incidences like that again.
Do you see the university's response to this young man who was tweeting about an ex-girlfriend from an off-campus location, although the girlfriend was presumably on campus? Does that strike you as part of a continuum of in this story of KU trying to find where that reach should extend and beyond what point it should not extend?
Yeah, I think the university is scrambling, and this makes it very apparent because when this went to court, immediately afterward, the chancellor changed the student code of conduct to better emphasize that the university would, in fact, have jurisdiction in situations like this one. And so that was very reactionary, and it also happened in the couple months after all the student activism surrounding the Huffington Post case. And so the university is trying to do something, and it's in kind of the wild, wild west of student right adjudication because there are a lot of cases and a lot of investigations happening in terms of how students respond or how universities respond to sexual assault and harassment. And so I think KU was trying to do the right thing, but is often like very inconsistent in trying to pursue that.
It is inconsistent as evidenced by the timeline. I mean, this instance, Mr. Yassin was he was expelled in November of 2013. That's a whole year before we got into the sexual assault problems that the university dealt with this year.
And that has been one of the reasons that students have been so concerned about any changes to the student code that would expand university jurisdiction beyond that required by federal law, because students are very concerned that the application of the student code would be inconsistent based on a number of factors, including the student's identity and their access to having lawyers throughout these processes.
Students are concerned about inconsistency. Are they more concerned about that than they are about free speech issues? Do people see this as a free speech issue?
In my experience, I've talked to several acquaintances that are in the college environment, and they're terrified by this case because they're thinking the university is watching all their tweets. The university can punish them for whatever they say, especially in light of the professor, I think 2 years ago, who was punished for tweeting derogatory comments about the NRA. So they're concerned about their social media presence, as they should be for college students. But, you know, the reality is, I don't think the university is watching their tweets. It's just whether it rises to a level that someone wishes to report them for it.
Yeah, and I think there is an important distinction between the NRA tweets and this one, in that there was a no-contact directive issued in this case, and so that's kind of the question here. But when it does come to universities and free speech, it is a very messy process.
So free speech, I mean, can we clarify that, though? Because what is protected under free speech on a university campus and what isn't? I mean, is saying something derogatory about another person on campus part of free speech, or is it separate from free speech?
It is part of free speech with some exception. There are, you know, there are free speech standards that we have as people out of the university environment that students in the university environment do not have access to. But I think, as Emma pointed out earlier, it's more about, in this case, that there was a directive not to talk about this woman, and he violated that directive.
So there is concern about people following the rules, basically, and respecting parameters. As we go out of here, I'm curious whether you think that students are really well protected by schools monitoring social media.
You know, I think that students have a right to free speech, but I also think that they have a right to the safe learning environment. I'm not convinced, though, that social media is as powerful as some believe it to be.
Yeah, I think free speech is very important, with the tempering of you can't violate another person's right to an education and you can't discriminate in regards to sex or race or disability or any other number of things.
So we have a non-conclusion conclusion, which is appropriate for any really meaty topic of discussion. Our time is up. Emma Holling, congratulations on getting your degree. Best of luck in your future.
Thank you.
And Caitlin Dorzenboss of the Lawrence Journal World, keep us posted as this story develops.
Yeah, I sure will. Thank you.
Thanks to the wonderful people at KPR for connecting us with both Emma and Caitlin this morning. Tomorrow, our food critics weigh in on pie versus cake. You can too on KCUR's Facebook page. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.